audio. A movie in your mind.
The world of the Lupi. Tempting danger. Graphic Audio presents The World of the Lupi by Eileen Wilkes. Narrated by Colleen Delaney, with performances by Nanette Savard, Danny Gavigan, Matthew Bassett, Michael Glenn, Michael John Casey, Nora Ashrati, Tim Carlin, Katie Karkoff, David Jordan, Elizabeth Jernigan, Terrence Aselford, Tim Getman, Jeff Allen, Faith Potts, Lily Beacon, Gregory Gordon, Mort Shelby, David Harris, Evan Casey, Colleen Delaney, Yasmin Toison, Drew Kopis, Tim Lynch, Nick DePinto, and Kimberly Gilbert. The World of the Lupi. Tempting Danger. He didn't have much face left. Lily stood well back, keeping her new black heels out of the pool of blood that was dry at the edges, still gummy near the body. She'd seen worse when she worked traffic division, but it was different when the mangling had been done on purpose. Mist hung in the warm air, visible in front of the police spotlights, clammy against her face. The smell of blood was thick in her nostrils. Flashes went off in a crisp 1-2 as the photographer recorded the scene. The officer behind the camera, O'Brien, was a short man with chipmunk cheeks and red hair cut so short it looked like fuzz on a peach.
"Hey, you!"
She grimaced. O'Brien never tired of a joke, no matter how stale. If they both lived to be 100 and ran into each other in the nursing home, the first thing he'd say to her would be,
"Hey, you!"
That is, assuming she kept her maiden name for the next 72 years. Considering the giddy whirl she laughingly called a social life, that seemed possible.
"Yeah, Irish.
Looks like you had a hot date tonight."
"No, me and my cat always dress for dinner. Dirty Harry looks great in a tux."
Lily tuned him out, along with the other SOC officer, the curious behind the chain-link fence, and the uniforms keeping them there. Spilled blood draws a crowd as easily as spilled sugar draws flies. The members of the public attending this particular crime scene probably didn't come from this neighborhood, though. Here, people assumed that curiosity came with a price tag. They knew what a drive-by sounded like, and the look of a drug deal going down. The members of the public craning their necks for a glimpse of gore were probably customers of the nightclub up the street. Club Hell did attract a distinctive clientele. The victim didn't look as if he came from around here either. He lay on his back on the dirty pavement. There was a big gulp cup, smashed flat by his feet, a scrap of newspaper under his butt, and a broken beer bottle by his foot. Whatever had torn out his throat and made a mess of his face had left the eye and cheekbone on the right side intact. One startled brown eye stared up at nothing from smooth skin the color of the wicker chair on her mother's front porch.
"Name brand jeans.
The kind you find in pricey department stores.
Black athletic shoes, red silk shirt."
Again, expensive brands. The silk of the right sleeve of that shirt was shredded over the forearm. Three deep gouges there, defensive wounds. That arm was outflung, the hand lying palm up with the fingers curled inward the way a child's will when sleeping. His other hand lay about 12 feet away, up against one of the poles of the swing set. A playground. Someone had ripped this guy's face off in a playground, for God's sake. There was a hard ache in Lily's throat, a tightness across her shoulders. She'd seen death often enough since she was promoted to homicide. Her stomach no longer turned over, but the regret, the sorrow over the waste, never went away. He wasn't young enough to have enjoyed those swings recently, mid-20s maybe. She put him at about 5'10", weight 180, weightlifter's shoulders and arms, powerful thighs. He'd been strong, perhaps cocky in his strength. Strength hadn't done him much good tonight. Neither had the .22 pistol he'd apparently brought with him. It rested near the severed hand, as if it had fallen from those fingers once death relaxed them.
"Careful, detective. Don't get your pretty dress dirty."
Lily didn't look away from the body. She knew the voice, having taken the man's report when she first arrived.
"More crime scenes are contaminated by police officers than civilians. You have a reason for bringing your big feet over here, Phillips?"
"I am 10 feet from the body, for Christ's sakes."
Now she looked at him. Officer Larry Phillips was one half of the responding unit. Lily hadn't run across him before, but she knew the type. He was over 40, still on the streets and sour about it. She was female, 28, and already a detective.
Believe it or not, evidence has been found more than 10 feet from the victim. What do you want?
I came to let you know that none of the helpful citizens over by the fence admits to having seen anything. They were partying at the club, left together, and saw the pretty lights flashing on the squad cars. Came over to see what was going on.
Club Hell, you mean?
That's where you'll need to look for your killer. The lab won't learn squat about this one.
There are other types of evidence.
Oh, yeah, maybe he dropped a calling card. Or maybe you agree with my partner. He thinks a puppy dog did it.
She glanced at the gap in the chain-link fence that served as an entry, where Phillips's partner, a young Hispanic officer, was one of the officers handling crowd control, taking names and addresses.
Your partner's a rookie?
Yeah. I explained about puppy dogs and how they don't usually bite a hand off in one chomp.
A fit man can usually fight a dog off. Not much sign of a fight. And there's that pistol.
Which the victim had probably been carrying, though it was just possible there'd been a third person at the scene. She shook her head.
The beast must have hit him quick.
Oh, they're fast, all right. Poor bastard probably didn't have time to know his hand was gone.
He had good instincts, though. He tried to pull his head down, protect his neck. That's when he lost some of his face. Then it ripped out his throat.
Oh, now. You're not supposed to say it. We have to say he now. Treat him like people. Full rights under the law.
I know the law.
Lily glanced up at Phillips. Way up. He was a long, stringy man, well over 6 feet. Of course, Lily had to look up to meet almost anyone's eyes. She'd almost persuaded herself that it didn't irritate her anymore.
This is your turf, officer. Can you ID the victim?
He's not from the hood.
Yeah, I got that much. Maybe he came here for a little action. Dope, sex, maybe the slightly more legal entertainment of Club Hell. If he's a regular, you could have seen him around.
Phillips shook his head.
That wasn't a drug killing or a pimp punishing a John who didn't pay. It's not even murder, really.
3 years ago, a case like this would have been handled by the X-Squad. Now it went to homicide.
The courts say otherwise.
Oh, and we know how smart those bleeding heart judges are. According to them, we're supposed to treat the beasts like they're human now. That messenger feed proves what a great idea that is.
I've seen uglier things done by men to other men and to women. And the scene still has to be kept clear.
Oh, sure thing, detective.
Phillips turned, then paused and took the toothpick out of his mouth. When he met her eyes, the mockery and anger had faded from his.
A word of advice from someone who put in 15 years on the X-Squad. Call them whatever you like, but don't mistake the lupi for human. They're hard to hurt, they're faster than us, they're stronger, and they like the way we taste.
This one doesn't seem to have done much tasting.
Yeah, something interrupted him. And don't forget, they're only legally human when they're on two legs. You run into one when it's four-footed, don't arrest it, shoot it, and aim for the brain.
I'll bear that in mind.
He scowled and went away.
Brass bald bitch. See if I ever help her.
Don't think you made a friend there.
Yeah, I'm all torn up about it, too.
She paused. The car pulling up behind the ambulance was from the coroner's office. Better get it done.
Looks like our victim will be declared legally dead soon. Are you finished with the pictures?
You need to get a closer look.
The words were innocuous, the tone of voice casual, but she knew what he meant. O'Brien had worked with her enough to know it wasn't a closer look she was after. He wouldn't say anything, though. It wasn't illegal to be as sensitive, but it could be complicated. The department's official policy about such things was don't ask, don't tell. This wasn't pure prejudice. Irreproducible data was not admissible in court, and a good defense attorney could rip an officer's testimony to shreds if there was a whiff of the paranormal about the investigation. But cops tend to be pragmatic. The unofficial policy was to use whatever it took to catch the bad guys, even if you had to do it under the table, which was why Lily was in a slum studying a corpse instead of fending off Henry Chen at her sister's engagement party, which just proved there was a bright side to everything. Lily met O'Brien's eyes and nodded.
Go ahead.
He shifted to stand between her and the crowd by the fence, fussing with his camera. He wasn't big enough to completely block anyone's view, but he made it hard for them to see exactly what she did. Lily appreciated it. She set her backpack on the ground and moved closer to the corpse, then knelt, careful of the way her skirt rode up. She reached for the dead man's hand. It was limp, no rigor mortis yet, skin waxy, his hand looked blue, and his face had a purplish cast, lividity minimal. None of it was conclusive, but it did suggest he hadn't been dead long when dispatch received the anonymous tip at 11:04. He'd kept his nails short and clean. They were square, the fingers short for the size of the palm, which was broad and flat. Partially healed scrapes across the knuckles. He'd been in a fight a few days ago. Pale nail beds, no rings on the fingers. And no response in her own flesh. Blood had run to his palm to dry in a blackish-brown patch that cracked slightly when she tilted the hand to catch the light better. That blood had trapped a tuft of mottled hair. Lily touched it. It was like touching concrete after the sun had set and finding the lingering heat, or like the moment after releasing a drill when the flesh still held the memory of vibration. Though it wasn't really heat or vibration she felt, Lily had never found a word to describe the sensation of touching something that had been touched by magic, but it was unmistakable. She'd tried to explain that to her sister once, the younger one, Beth, not her perfect older sister. If everything you touched all day, every day was smooth, the second you touched roughness, you would know, even if it was only a tiny bit rough, as was the case tonight. Lily set the hand down gently. No, the lab crew wouldn't learn much about this killer. No more than she'd learned from touching the hairs he'd left behind in his victim's blood. She stood.
So, was the beast chaser right? Am I wasting my time collecting samples?
She gave him a sharp look.
You'll do things by the book.
Yeah, I need you to tell me how to do my job.
Sorry. Yes, Phillips was right. The victim was human, but the killer's a werewolf.
Lupus, you mean? We got a memo about that. Lupi is plural, lupus is singular.
A killer by any other name.
She glanced at the onlookers by the fence.
Looks like I'll be paying a visit to Club Hell tonight.
15 minutes later, the coroner's assistant had declared the victim dead, and Lily had an ID. Carlos Fuentes, age 25. The address on the driver's license was 4419 West Thomason, apartment 33C. Phillips was running the license. Lily went to talk to the helpful citizens. There were six of them, four women and two men. Leather and body piercings seemed to be the dominant fashion theme for both sexes, and skin. The one currently looking at the driver's license she held in a plastic baggie wore leather pants dyed lime green and inch-wide leather straps crisscrossing her chest. X marked the spots. Her hair was blonde where it wasn't purple. She had seven earrings in her left ear, three in her right, a ruby stud in one nostril, and a tiny hoop in her navel. Her name was Stacy Farquhar.
I know I've seen him before, but driver's licenses, you know, they never look like the person.
A skeletally thin man in a black leather bodysuit was looking over her shoulder. His dark brown hair, glossy and well-kept, hung past his shoulders. He wore a single earring in his left ear, either a diamond or a good imitation.
Looks like Carlos Fuentes.
Carlos?
A chubby Caucasian woman with dyed black hair twisted into dozens of braids crowded closer and peered at the license in Lily's hand.
Oh, God, it's him! Poor Carlos!
You know Carlos Fuentes, ma'am?
We all do. That is, he hangs out at the club sometimes.
She exchanged an uneasy look with the other woman.
Oh, for God's sake, it's not like it's a secret. They're going to find out anyway.
You know what you are, Theo? Jealous. You're just jealous as hell.
Me? Jealous? You're the one who was all over him last...
Stacy stamped her foot.
You'd rat him out. You know what kind of deal he'll get from the cops?
The chubby woman nodded.
They've always persecuted the Lupi.
You got yourself
centuries
all in the lather. You did everything but dope Rachel's drink just to give you a shot at him.
Brutality isn't a myth, you know. Just last year in New Hampshire...
all over him last Tuesday. Ugh, too
cops
obvious.
Cops used to shoot them on sight, so if you think any Lupi will get a fair hearing...
he didn't
hearing,
want any part of what you were offering, did he?
You just wish he swung your way.
Who's he?
They fell silent, exchanging guilty glances. One of the men, Franklin Booth, tossed aside the cigarette he'd been smoking.
Poor Rachel.
Lily turned to him.
Rachel?
Carlos's wife. She's at the club now with...
Franklin!
Sugar, it's no good. Theo is right. They're gonna find out. Maybe he's alibied. I mean, we all saw him there, didn't we?
Well, of course. He was there for hours.
Lily turned back to Booth.
Rachel Fuentes is at Club Hell now?
She was when we left.
Who was she with?
Why? Who else would put the ladies in such a flutter?
Some of the gentlemen, too, I'll admit.
The skinny man bowed to the chubby woman, conceding her point.
For all the good it does us, Lupi are religiously hetero.
I could use a name.
Rule Turner, of course. The prince graces the club with his presence now and then. Recently, he's been gracing Rachel with a good deal more.
Lily had orders to call Captain Randall once she'd finished preliminaries. She did so on her way to Club Hell. Of course, she was supposed to have been off duty tonight. Lily punched in the captain's number. She couldn't remember the last confirmed case of a human killed by a lupus. Certainly there hadn't been one in San Diego since the Supreme Court's ruling rendering the lupi subject to the penalties and protections of the law instead of a bullet. It didn't take a precog to picture tomorrow's headlines. This one was going to generate a lot of heat. Lily's years in vice and homicide prior to making detective had rubbed the green off, but her shield was still shiny. She figured she could be philosophical about handing this one off to one of the senior detectives after she conducted the initial interviews at Club Hell. Randall was waiting for her call. It didn't take long to summarize her progress.
After speaking with the bystanders, I followed the tracks left by the perp. Visible traces petered out near the west end of the playground, but I was able to continue beyond that.
Lily had taken off her shoes and stockings, actually, letting her bare feet find traces where magic had passed. Her feet were filthy now, but it worked.
The trail ended in an alley between Humstead Avenue and North Lee.
You couldn't track him beyond that?
No, sir. I believe he changed there between two dumpsters.
The magic imprinted on the dirty concrete had been strong, unfamiliar but distinctive.
In human form, he wouldn't leave the kind of traces he does in wolf form.
You've secured the alley?
Yes, sir. The SOC crew will get to it when they can. I left O'Brien in charge at the scene.
Well, what the hell do you mean? You left him in charge? Where are you?
Outside Club Hell. The victim's wife should be there. I need to notify her. I also need to talk to Rule Turner.
You think you're stealing a march on me, you? Relax. I didn't have you yanked out of your sister's fancy party because I wanted someone else in charge.
Then it's still my case?
Your lead. Unless you think you can't handle it.
No, sir, I don't think that. But I don't have as much experience as some of the others.
Your particular skills may be useful. And the last thing I need is some prejudiced asshole making like a tough guy with the Nokolai Prince. He's good at playing the press, and they're going to be breathing down our necks on this one, so it's yours. But unless you get a confession right off the bat, you're going to need help. I can let you have Meckle or Brady.
Meck. Sergeant Meckle, I mean.
Both were good cops, but Brady didn't play well with others, especially young female others.
Tell him to pick up an evidence vac and some paper from O'Brien. If the lupi at the club cooperate, I'll get their shoes for the lab. Meck can vacuum their clothes.
Well, the killer wasn't wearing clothes when he ripped out Fuentes' throat?
No, sir. We won't be able to tie him to the scene, but we might be able to connect him to the alley where he changed. He'll have had a lot of Fuentes' blood on him. Even if the change removed all traces from his body, it wouldn't clean up any drops that fell. It might be some of that blood got on his shoes after he dressed, or something else from the alley that connects him. Or maybe a few of his own hairs got in his clothes. Wolf hairs, I mean.
Good thinking. That's worth a try. I'll roust Meck out of bed and send him to you. In the meantime, handle Turner carefully. Call if by some chance you make an arrest. Otherwise, I'll expect to see you in my office at 9.
Lily frowned as she jammed the phone into its pocket in her backpack. She didn't suffer from false modesty. She was a good cop, a good detective. But she wasn't the only good detective in homicide. The only sensitive, yes, but the captain could have had the use of her ability without putting her in charge. She'd never been lead on a case this big. He must think she was up for the challenge. She meant to prove him right. The mist had thickened. The smallest breath of wind would have chased the tiny droplets together, turning dampness to drizzle. But the air remained still. Blurry halos hung around street lamps, stoplights, and neon signs. Like the one Lily was looking up at now. Neon red devils danced at either end of the sign, jabbing tiny pitchforks into the glowing letters that read, Club Hell.
Kitschy.
The sign suggested a 50s sort of naughtiness, innocent compared to the real nastiness of the neighborhood. How long had the club been around, anyway?
I wonder if that's on purpose.
Pardon?
She glanced at the young man who'd spoken, Officer Arturo Gonzalez, Phillips's partner. He was about 5 inches taller than her, and husky in a fit just out of the service way, but with the kind of round cheeks old ladies like to pinch. She'd sent him to keep an eye on the club's entrance until she could get there.
The club must do a pretty good business if they can afford a parking lot and guard. You ever been inside, officer?
No, ma'am.
You're Southern, I take it?
No, ma'am. I'm from West Texas.
Sounds Southern to me.
Funny how people who aren't from Texas think that. I guess it's like with folks from Los Angeles. They never say they're from the West Coast or California, just L.A.
Well, I guess that says it all. What do you know about Club Hell?
It's a werewolf hangout. Them and their groupies.
Don't forget adventurous tourists. They like to check it out, too.
She studied him a moment. Lupus' sexual mores being what they were, the nightclub was considered seriously depraved. Naturally, this made it a popular spot.
Texas was one of the shoot-on-sight states, wasn't it?
Yes, ma'am, it was. Till the courts changed things.
Well, California wasn't. So it's always been legal to be a Lupus here, as long as you were registered.
That's who originally hung out at Club Hell. The registered Lupi. The ones who'd been given shots that prevented the change. The ones people thought were safe.
Your ex-squads killed them.
Only if they violently resisted registration, or if a court determined there was a clear and present danger.
That was the theory, at least. Federal law used to call for all Lupi to be registered, forcibly, if necessary, and given the shots. But forcibly covers a lot of territory when you're dealing with creatures who can absorb a couple of rounds without slowing down on their way to rip out your throat. Lupi had been notoriously averse to the registration process.
I'm going to talk to the people inside now. Some of them will be Lupi. They're citizens now, entitled to the same rights as other citizens. You okay with that, or do I need to get someone else to assist?
He thought it over. Lily didn't know whether to be appalled at how much thought it took, or impressed by his honesty. At last, he nodded.
Guess we're around to enforce the law, not decide on right and wrong.
Colored lights strobed a cavernous room crowded with tables, people, voices, and music. The ceiling was high and lost in darkness. Lily smelled smoke. Not tobacco or pot, not wood smoke or anything else she could name. More of a scent than actual smoke. Someone's idea of brimstone, maybe?
Welcome to hell. Now you must pay the price for crossing the portal.
Lily turned her head. A little man with a big head and burly shoulders sat on a high stool beside a table holding an old-fashioned cash register. His suit could have come straight from an old black-and-white movie, but that wasn't what made Lily stare. He possessed ugliness the way a few rare souls possess beauty, an ugliness that fascinated. His nose was long and thin. It stretched toward his mouth like a cartoon witch's, as if it had melted, then reformed in mid-drip. He had no hair, not much in the way of chin or lips, and skin the color of mushrooms. His feet were the size of Lily's hands and dangled well off the ground.
There's a door fee?
20 ahead.
Not this time. I'm Detective Yu.
Lily took her shield from a side pocket of the backpack and held it out.
And you are?
Call me Max. So what do you want?
To speak with some of your customers. I understand Rachel Fuentes and Rule Turner are here.
And I should care?
You should cooperate. Are they here?
I guess.
How long has Mr. Turner been in the club?
Why?
Because I'm a cop and I get to ask questions. Have you been at the door all evening?
Since 9.
Do you know how long Turner's been here?
Maybe.
He didn't add to that, just stared at her. He had a disconcerting stare, unblinking as a reptile's. Lily's lips thinned.
Maybe I should speak to the owner or manager.
No manager, and I'm the owner. All right. His big deal highness arrived at 9:15, 9:30, something like that. Fuentes was already here.
9:30. That was within her best guess window for when Fuentes had been killed, but she was hardly an expert.
Where are your exits?
This one and the fire exit at the back. Ugh, I hate cops.
And I should care?
Maybe you aren't as stupid as you look. Nice boobs, though. I like them little. You wanna fuck?
Her mouth fell open. Her hands twitched with the urge to strangle the little creep.
Want to spend the next couple weeks locked up in a teensy tiny cell?
Hey, I just asked.
Take me to Rachel Fuentes.
She's with Turner.
Then take me to Turner.
You don't read the papers? Everyone knows what he looks like.
I've seen pictures.
The prince of the Nokolai clan was something of a celebrity. He lobbied Sacramento and Washington for his people and partied with the Hollywood crowd.
I'd still like him pointed out. And Rachel Fuentes.
All right. You!
He hopped off his stool as he waved at a bare-chested young man distributing drinks.
Dipshit! Come take the door!
He scowled up at Lily.
You coming or not?
Lily followed him into the crowded room, Gonzalez trailing behind. Her stomach was starting to hurt. In a few minutes, she'd be telling Rachel Fuentes that her husband had been murdered. Maybe the woman had been getting some exotic extramarital nookie. Didn't mean she'd take the news of her husband's death calmly. Experience had taught Lily that love took many forms, not all of them obvious or even healthy. At least this time she wouldn't have to treat the new widow as a murder suspect. Accessory, maybe. But whoever had killed Carlos Fuentes, it hadn't been his wife. There was no such thing as a female werewolf.
What's your name again?
Don't listen well, do you? Max!
You have a last name?
Smith!
Smith? That shrunken blob of malevolence was named Smith? Gonzalez moved closer.
He looks like a gnome.
Too big, too mean. And who ever heard of a gnome hanging out around humans?
A crazy gnome, then. On steroids.
I guess so, in a psycho sort of way. But gnomes can't own property.
Though that would change if the Species Citizen Bill went through. Red candles flickered on most of the tables. A circular stage, currently empty, held down the center of the big room, while neon flames climbed the stone walls. So did two circular staircases, fading into darkness after the first story. Gonzalez's uniform drew a lot of attention. In the farthest right corner of the room, three larger tables floated in their own little island of space, set apart from the rest. There were five men at those tables, and a lot of women. All of the men were dark-haired, probably Anglos. One of them looked naked, though the table hid his lower half. Maybe he was one of the servers, who were all young, male, and bare from the belly button up. The women were more of a melting pot. She counted three redheads, two African-Americans, three blondes, and four women with brown or black hair. Lily had reached the edge of the dance floor when two of the women stood. The shorter one looked Hispanic, though it was hard to be sure. She had butt-length hair and large breasts fighting to escape the bodice of her tight red dress. She bent over the man closest to her, the one in the table's center. He had one of the redheads snuggled up on his other side. He turned his head. Lily got a glimpse of his face before the woman's hair fell forward, curtaining what looked like an enthusiastic kiss. Rule Turner. Even in the dim light, he was easy to ID. She'd already guessed that the power at that table rested with the man at its center. Bodies tilted subtly his way. Chairs were arranged so the others could see him. And he was the very picture of elegant debauchery, wasn't he? Sprawled in his chair so comfortably, loose-limbed, his black shirt unbuttoned nearly to the waist, kissing one woman while he held on to another.
Mr. Smith!
He didn't pause or acknowledge her, so she took a quick step to catch up and put a hand on his shoulder to stop him, and snatched it back immediately, amazed. The buzz had been strong enough to come through his suit. I guess some gnomes really are hostile little perverts and not shy at all.
What?
Smith turned.
Is that Rachel Fuentes?
She resisted the urge to rub her palm and nodded at the woman who, having finished kissing Turner, was leaving the table with her friend.
Yeah!
Lily turned to Gonzalez.
Keep an eye on her. She's probably headed for the ladies' room, but we don't want to take any chances. If she tries to leave, stop her. Don't tell her why. Don't answer questions. Bring her to me.
He nodded and moved away.
The men at those tables, are they all Lupi?
They're the draw, aren't they? Not that I don't put on a good show, too. Stick around, you'll see.
I'm going to need a place to conduct interviews.
I won't have you hassling my customers.
She considered the unpleasant little man, if that's what she should call him. Did male gnomes think of themselves as men?
Are we going to argue about every request I make?
Probably.
He turned and walked off. Lily followed and got her first up-close look at Rule Turner.
Mixed European heritage.
Lily noted sculpted cheekbones and a strong, slightly crooked nose.
Great teeth.
Rule Turner grinned at something said by the man across from him, a man whose hair halfway hid the silvery numbers of a tattoo, indicating he'd once been registered, not to mention wicked eyebrows. Lily noticed eyebrows the way some people paid attention to shoulders or lips, and Turner's were distinctive. Dark slashes that mirrored the angle of his cheekbones. The eyebrows in question lifted quizzically when he noticed them approaching. Then dark eyes met hers, and she stopped thinking altogether.
What the hell was that?
Oh, put your tongue back in your mouth. Hey, I got a woman for you. But this one claims to be a detective.
Some kind of blood sugar thing, maybe.
But she hadn't gone dizzy or fainted, just blank. The bare-chested man waved a hand.
Ignore Max. He doesn't have to practice obnoxious. He's got it down pat.
Lily gave this man a closer look. He was lean, with tousled hair the color of cinnamon, and the most stunningly perfect face she'd ever seen on a man or woman, not to mention an incredible body, which she could see a great deal of, though a few details were concealed by the table.
You're naked.
Not quite, darling. G-string. Must keep Max legal.
It said something about Turner's presence that she'd noticed this nearly nude Adonis second.
And your name is?
Cullen. Come and have a seat, love.
He patted his thigh as if he expected her to plop down in his lap.
Rule doesn't need any more women.
And you do?
Turner showed no registration tattoo.
But I suspect it's a moot point. Is this an official visit?
I need to ask some questions, Mr. Turner. I'm Detective Yu.
She held out her shield. He barely glanced at it.
I'll be happy to help. Call me Rule.
Do you know Carlos Fuentes?
Others in the group grinned.
We're acquainted. I've been seeing his wife, Rachel.
Candid fellow. Are they separated?
No, they're quite happy together.
Well, to use seeing in a less ambiguous sense, have you seen Carlos tonight?
No.
The eyebrows lifted. Turner glanced at the others.
Anyone?
It appeared, from the murmurs and headshakes, that no one had seen Fuentes.
Fuentes hasn't been in the club.
Turner faced her.
What's going on?
How long have you been here?
I'll play along a little longer. Then I want some answers. I arrived shortly after 9.
And you haven't left the club since then?
No. I believe I can find witnesses to confirm that, if necessary.
Three of the women moved to speak at once.
Hold on a second.
Lily set down her backpack so she could get her notebook from it.
I'll need your names. You first.
The redhead draped against Turner's side smirked. The redhead straightened. She had a piquant little face shaped like a cat's, wide through the forehead and temples, narrowing to a pointy chin. Her hair was cropped extremely short, and gold dangled from her ears. No leather, but her snug white top showed off plenty of creamy skin that suggested she was a natural redhead.
I'll be happy to testify that Rule's been here since 9:20 or so, Detective Yu.
The slight stress on Lily's last name caught her attention.
And your name is?
Ginger.
A small smile played over her lips.
Ginger Harris.
Lily froze.
Didn't recognize me, did you? Well, it's been a long time. Imagine you growing up to be a cop, while I... I became a slut.
Turner said something. Lily didn't take it in. How could she have failed to recognize Ginger's eyes? The color, the size, the shape? They were set wide and so deep that the upper lid almost disappeared. The pupils were a dark amber, like a beer bottle held up to the sun. Her eyebrows were skimpy, like her lashes. But it had been so long. Lily hadn't seen those eyes since shortly before her 7th birthday, except in the occasional nightmare. Ginger's eyes were just like her sister's.
You're wearing contacts.
LASIK surgery, actually. You haven't changed much, aside from growing a few inches. Still the same sweet, serious little prig you were back then.
Lily wanted to ask Ginger if her world was divided into prigs and sluts. She wanted to ask about Ginger's parents, her brother, but there was a dead man on his way to the morgue. She had to be Detective Yu now, not Lily.
I'll need a current address.
If you want to do lunch, sugar, I'll give you my cell number. Hard to catch me at home.
I'll need your address for my report.
All work, aren't you? Oh, all right. I'm at 22129 Thornton, apartment 133.
And now, we have demonstrated our willingness to cooperate with the police. I'd like to know what investigation we're cooperating in.
Lily met Turner's eyes. Nothing happened. Idiot. Had she really been afraid that something would?
Blood sugar, that's all it was.
Lily held his gaze for a moment to prove that she could, and felt a tug deep in her belly. The liquid roll of desire. Unmistakable. Infuriating.
Homicide.
Lily hoped that her face was as hard to read as his.
This is a homicide investigation.
Where? What?
Turner didn't react or shift position by so much as a finger. Rather, he seemed to gather stillness around him like a force field. A quiet whose power lapped out over the others, gradually silencing them.
Who died?
Carlos Fuentes.
Jesus!
The naked Adonis, Cullen, looked briefly, intensely relieved. Turner's gaze suddenly shifted to behind Lily.
You'll be kind to Rachel.
Turner stood and started around the table. Lily turned. Rachel Fuentes was returning. From a distance, All Lily had seen of the woman were big breasts and magnificent hair. Up close, Lily blinked, startled. According to the gossip columns, Turner had dated some of the most beautiful women in the country. Rachel Fuentes wasn't one of them. She was young, not much over 20, and her hair was indeed lovely, her breasts large, but everything else was average. She carried 15 extra pounds and not in the right places. Her face was narrow, her nose large, with a high bridge that made her eyes look too closely set. Still, those eyes were her best feature. Large, dark, and luminous.
What, you missed me?
Turner reached her and looped her arms around his neck.
There's a police officer to see you. She has bad news, Kaida.
The happiness drained out, along with much of her color. Lily stepped forward. There was no good way to deliver news like this.
I'm very sorry, Ms. Fuentes. Your husband was killed tonight.
Killed?
Rachel shook her head.
No, you must be wrong. He's at church. There was a rehearsal. He's a singer. Did you know that? He has a beautiful voice. You're wrong.
As gently as she could, Lily gave her the basics. The place and manner of death, the identification based on the driver's license, and what was left of the victim's face. The fact that he'd been killed by a wolf. Rachel Fuentes shuddered once. Briefly, Lily met Turner's eyes. Rachel seemed oblivious to the irony of being comforted by her lover for her husband's death. Rule Turner wasn't. 4 hours later, Club Hell was empty of customers and cops. Scents hung heavy in the air, a blurred bouquet impossible to sort when Rule was two-legged. Alcohol, fruit, smoke, sweat, humanity, and that damned incense Max was so fond of that was supposed to represent brimstone. And her. She'd left an hour ago, but her scent lingered. Or maybe he was imagining that. Rule sat down in the same chair he'd occupied earlier and punched in a number on his phone he knew better than his own. Max and Cullen were at the bar on the west wall, making busy with drinks to grant him privacy.
This had better be important.
I need to talk to the Roe, Nettie.
I'll have him call you after he wakes up. He's in natural sleep now, but he needs that too.
You misunderstand. I did not ask to speak to my father. Your Lununcio needs to speak to his Roe.
Oh, God, you do that well. Too well for my peace of mind. All right, I'll take the phone to him. But if he has a setback, I'm taking it out of your hide.
I hope to have a hide for you to take it out of.
A moment later, his father came on.
Yes?
Eisen's voice remained strong in spite of his recent attack, but then he did still have both lungs.
The husband of a woman I'm involved with was killed tonight. The police believe a lupus did it.
You aren't under arrest.
I'm a suspect, of course. So is every other lupus who was here. I was very cooperative.
He glanced wryly at his bare feet.
They had a strip.
What?
I was all very respectful.
And it had been fun to see the look on the lovely detective's face when, complying rather more instantly with her request than she'd intended, he'd started to unzip his pants. She'd stopped him, of course, but part of her hadn't wanted to. She hadn't liked that.
I was escorted to the men's room, where I stood on a sheet of white paper to disrobe. A male sergeant went through my things thoroughly.
What were they after?
Evidence, I suppose. Though if the killer was in wolf form, I can't see what they hoped to find. But Detective Yu is no fool. There must be something they thought could link one of us to the scene. Which, by the way, was a playground very near here.
What's he like?
She.
Rule took a moment to order his thoughts, filtering out the personal.
Bright. Determined. Probably ambitious. Doesn't like me much, but she hasn't made up her mind I'm guilty either. I have the impression my alibi doesn't cover the time Fuentes was killed.
What alibi?
I have numerous witnesses to my whereabouts from 9:30 on, including several humans, which helps, but I was alone from late afternoon until I left for the club.
I can get you witnesses for that period easily enough, but there'll be Lupi. Cops and juries don't trust a lupus's testimony.
Maybe they have reason.
Maybe they do. Okay, here's what you do. First, find out if it really was a lupus who killed the man. Wouldn't be the first time someone tried to pin his sins on one of us.
That had occurred to me. I've spoken to a reporter who's willing to exchange information, but he doesn't have anything yet. Given what Cullen told us, though.
Which may or may not be true.
He was right about the attack on you.
But his warning came too late, didn't it? If he was trying to convince me of his bona fides... Calm down, boy. I can practically smell you bristling over the phone. I know he's your friend, and I'm not discounting what he said, but I'm not swallowing it whole either. He's clanless.
But not outlaw.
A rogue is, by definition, insane.
Look, we know something is cooking.
But not what, or who the cooks are. Guesses, that's all we have. I need facts. The cops may stumble across some. I need to know what they find out, and you need to stay out of jail. The obvious solution is for you to seduce that pretty detective.
What? What makes you think she's pretty?
You can hide a lot of things from a lot of people, but I'm not just your roe. I'm your father. You think I can't tell when you're attracted to a woman?
Attraction aside, it would help if I could tell her some of our suspicions.
Don't tell her anything. She won't believe you. It would interfere with gaining her trust.
You sound as if Nettie let you out of sleep too soon.
You all think you know more about my body than I do. Yes, Nettie, I know you've got a piece of paper saying you do. Think I'm impressed?
Rule could picture Nettie standing near her patient's bed, arms crossed.
We think you have no idea of your limits.
The fretful note in Eisen's voice worried Rule. His father was not a fretful man.
Besides, I'm scared of Nettie. She's already threatened me.
You should be. Damn tyrant. No, you will not.
Rule heard both sides of the argument that followed. Nettie won. A few minutes later, she came on the line.
I've put him back into sleep. This time he's staying under for 24 hours.
He ran a hand over his head.
He'll be fuzzy after so long in sleep, of course, if he needs it.
Rule, you saw his wounds. There's nothing he can't heal, but until he grows some of those bits back, his condition is not going to be stable. Unless you covet your father's job. Don't be so touchy. The plain fact is that you're heir. If the roe dies, you take over. And some will wonder if you wanted it that way.
You're giving me gristle. Lots of chew, not much meat. How is he, really?
Hard-headed. Worried, and older than he wants to accept. The pain's too much for him, and he doesn't heal as fast as he once did. He won't go to a hospital. No, don't bother to explain. I understand his reasons, but if he can't use technology to keep him going while he heals, he'll have to spend a lot of time in sleep.
Rule swallowed his fear. He couldn't be a child now. There was bloody little room to be a son.
If he must, he must.
I shouldn't have let him out of sleep as soon as I did. He faked me out, got his vitals under control long enough to... Well, never mind. Don't worry about things here. Your father will heal, and the council can handle things while he does.
He wanted to be at Clanholme too, dammit. Tradition banned him from his father's presence while he healed, but not from Clanholme itself. This was his big brother's doing when he returned to his father's side after the attack. Benedict's authority to bar the Lu Nuncio from Clanholme was shaky in theory, firm enough in practice. No one argued with Benedict about security. Most people didn't argue with Benedict, period.
Give Toby a hug for me. I'll be in touch.
He disconnected and tucked his phone in his jacket pocket. Then he just sat for a moment. He was scared. For his father, his people, and himself. This was a hell of a time for the Nokalai leader to be incapacitated. Which, of course, was exactly what Eisen's attackers wanted. Rule stood and headed for the bar and the one scent that drew him right now.
My coffee's ready.
I don't see how you can drink that crap.
Cullen grinned and slid a mug across the bar. It held coffee made from Rule's private stock of beans.
It requires a palate.
He could keep his shoulders loose. He could control his expression, his voice, and to some extent, his smell. But he couldn't keep the nerves from crawling across his belly.
Yeah, this place looks like hell with the lights up.
Rule slid onto a stool. Max set his own mug, which would hold Irish whiskey, not coffee, on the bar and hopped up on the stool next to Rule's.
That's the point!
But this is the morning after kind of hell. Like a carnival before night falls and the lights and music turn tacky into mystery.
It's 5 o'clock in the goddamn morning. What do you expect? Anyway, I don't want to hear about carnivals. Makes me think of the years I spent in a sideshow.
Cullen leaned in, fidgeting with glasses on the bar.
You were in a sideshow. Was this before the war or after?
Which war? Ugh, humans are assholes. Leave the damn glasses alone.
Cullen continued polishing the glass he'd picked up.
World War II. That's the one you always lie about.
Jealousy. This younger generation is sick with it. Lacks respect, too.
You calling me a member of the younger generation?
You're all younger. Children. Every one of you. Running around like crazy so you won't notice how soon you're gonna die.
Max took a silver case out of his pocket, opened it, and selected one of the cheap cigars he used to poison the air.
Take the way you idealize truth. Telling it, finding it, finding it. As if it were lying around somewhere waiting for you to pick it up. Childish. People live by stories, not truth. What you really want are answers, so you won't have to figure things out for yourselves.
He pulled out his lighter.
I admit, thinking takes time.
Don't.
Max paused, squinting at Rule for a moment. He put the lighter down.
Your father?
The row is healing. Sorry, didn't mean to make you think something was wrong. Well, that something more was wrong anyway.
You're shaken.
Rule took a moment to sort out what to say. Max and Cullen were his friends. At the moment, they were colleagues, too, of sorts. But they weren't Nokolai.
None of us expected them to act this soon. And I didn't expect it to be this personal.
He thought of Rachel, her eyes red and swollen, empty of everything but grief.
Perhaps I should have.
Regrets are the most useless form of guilt. They always arrive too late to do any good.
That's their nature, isn't it? The row extends Nokolai's gratitude and offers you the aid and comfort of the clan for a moon cycle.
I thank the row.
Cullen's fingers held tight to the glass he'd been polishing.
Canny old bastard that he is, I'm surprised he didn't offer me money.
The row has a great respect for money and an understanding of what it can and can't buy. The offer wasn't meant as an insult, Cullen.
The other man shrugged and slid the glass back in its overhead rack.
Perhaps not. I'm tempted to show up at Clan Home for a month just to make his hackles rise.
You need a bodyguard. We knew they targeted Aizen. Why wouldn't they try to get rid of you, too?
Killing Carlos Fuentes is an uncertain means to that end. Besides, it doesn't fit. Why risk an investigation?
Might be cocksure.
Might have reason.
Cullen was messing with the wine bottles now, rearranging them to suit some arcane sense of composition.
So far, they're batting 1,000.
Not even 500. They tried to kill Aizen and failed. Now they've tried to get Rule put away, but the frame's sloppy. Quit that! My bartender won't be able to find anything!
You're assuming we know their goals. Aizen isn't dead, but he's out of the picture for a while. That may serve their purpose just as well. And we don't know why Fuentes was killed, or that I'll manage to stay out of jail.
You're not going to jail.
No. Rule is right. Our opponents are subtle, and we can't afford to underestimate them.
Subtle's just another way of saying convoluted. In real life, the fancier the scheme, the more likely it is to fall apart.
Cullen picked up Max's lighter, flicked it, and studied the flame.
There's a rumor of a banshee sighting in Texas.
Oh, well, is that what this is about? Signs and portents? The big bad werewolf has his panties in a twist because some idiot can't tell marsh gas from a banshee? And in Texas?
Cullen didn't say a word, but his face tightened, his pupils contracted, and the lighter's flame suddenly shot up a foot and darted toward Max.
Hey!
Max fell off the stool.
Are you crazy? You want to burn the place down? Like I really need to explain to the fire department and the insurance company about my crazy were-friend who has this little problem with anger management?
He stood up, rubbing one hip.
Cullen.
The other man looked at him. After a moment, his eyes went back to normal and the fire died.
I'm not laughing. What are you suggesting?
I tossed the bones after the cops left.
Teenage tricks.
Rule knew little about divination, but everyone tried tossing the bones at some point. Usually, as Max had said, as a teenager, when the lure of the forbidden was strong and common sense was short. The results were unreliable at best, or so he'd always thought. But done by a sorcerer of the blood?
And?
I asked for information about your enemy, and got this.
He pulled a handful of dice out of his pocket and tumbled them onto the bar. Snake eyes. All of them. All six dice had a single dot on every side.
Jesus.
Rule's mouth was dry.
I don't suppose there's a chance you did that yourself. Accidentally?
About the same chance you have of turning into a kitty cat at the next full moon.
Another sorcerer?
I don't think so.
There's some of the Fae could do it. Don't know why they would, but who knows why a Fae does anything.
Or we can consider the obvious.
Cullen looked at Rule.
Yes. Maybe one of the old ones has awakened and is stirring this pot.
The low ceilings and twisty ramps of the sub-basement parking at headquarters always made Lily feel as if she were traveling through the guts of a concrete behemoth. Her cell phone rang as she pointed her old Toyota down yet another rigid intestine. She glanced at the caller ID.
Hello, Mother. I'm a bit pressed for time. I'm due in the captain's office at 9.
The captain's office? Are you in trouble?
Why did her mother assume that? It's not as if Lily had been in trouble all the time as a kid. Just the opposite.
It's a briefing. Kind of like a meeting, you know? Like people with real jobs have.
Dead silence on the other end. Her mother could cram more reproach into silence than most people managed by screaming curses.
Sorry, I'm short on sleep.
This will just take a moment. You left last night before I got a firm date from you for the fitting.
I'm driving right now. I don't have my planner handy.
Then you will call me once you do. Really, Lily, my cousin's friend is a very busy woman, and she's given us a handsome discount. You must show some courtesy. You've already missed one appointment, and your bridesmaid gown simply has to be altered. The bodice looked terrible on you.
Lily wanted to say that no amount of alteration would make her look good in puke green, but she was already in trouble.
I'll check my schedule and email you, okay?
Her mother wasn't fond of email, but grudgingly accepted the compromise and launched into a detailed description of the newest wedding crisis. Lily's older sister was going to be married in grand style if it killed their mother. Lily pulled into her parking place, deep in the belly of the garage, most of her attention on the report she'd pulled together before leaving her apartment. As Lily shut and locked her car door, what her mother had just said sank in. It seemed the menu for the rehearsal dinner had to be changed. The groom's sister was allergic to ginger.
Lily, what is it?
Speaking of Ginger, I saw Ginger Harris last night.
Ginger Harris? Why would you want to see her? What's going on?
It was in connection with a case. Do you know what happened to the Harrises? Where they moved?
This is not healthy. I thought you'd put all that behind.
I have.
Except for the occasional nightmare.
This is for the job, Mother.
I don't know where they went. I suppose I could ask Doris Beaton. I believe she kept in touch.
I'd appreciate it.
Lily punched the button for the elevator.
Why do you need to know about the Harrises?
I'm not sure yet. Police work would be a lot easier if we knew ahead of time which leads were important.
Was it intuition or the past crawling across Lily's shoulders? She rolled them, trying to dislodge the sensation.
Thanks, though, for offering to check with Mrs. Beaton. I know the subject distresses you.
This isn't about my feelings. I worry about you.
I know. I'm fine.
But it had always seemed to Lily that it was about her mother as much as herself. So many threads spinning out from that one event. No matter how she tugged, clipped, or tried to untangle them, the knots remained.
The elevator's here. I'd better go.
Check your planner and get back to me. Bye, dear.
Lily slid her phone in her backpack. It was a relief to return her mind to the case. Threads. That's what she had. A confusing tangle of threads, and not much in the way of hard facts to tell her where to tug. She'd taken a lot of statements, but there would be lies twisted in with the truth, and all sorts of evasions, omissions, and simple mistakes. Time of death was likely to be critical with this one. Maybe the lab would have a preliminary report soon. Not that they'd be able to tell much, but they should at least be able to confirm that the killer was one of the blood. Science depends on things happening a certain way without fail. Water boils at 100 degrees Celsius at sea level, no matter who does the boiling. Mix potassium nitrate, sulfur, and charcoal together in the right proportions, and you end up with gunpowder every time. No random batches of gold dust or baking soda to confuse matters. But magic's capricious. Individual. The cells and body fluids of those of the blood, inherently magical beings, don't perform the same way every time they're tested, which could make it possible to identify the traces magic leaves in its wake, but plays hell with lab results. The elevator creaked to a halt on the first floor, where two people got on. Lily glanced at her watch. Maybe she should have taken the stairs. If the parking garage was the beast's guts, the elevators were its circulatory system, which meant the building was often in shock due to circulatory failure because the elevators were notoriously slow and cranky. The elevator eventually deposited Lily on the third floor. She headed for what she liked to call her office. It was really just a small L off one end of the main room, lacking the dignity of a door or windows. But it was a private nook and had room for her desk, some filing cabinets, an extra chair, a struggling philodendron, and a pot of ivy to conquer the world. She rounded the corner.
Detective Yu.
Rule Turner rose politely from the battered wooden chair to the left of her desk.
Your colleagues assured me it was all right to wait for you here.
Her smile was crooked and charming. He was wearing black again, an open-necked black shirt with a black jacket and slacks. Very Hollywood. The jacket looked as if it had cost as much as her car was worth.
The chief sent him to see you.
Mech sat on Lily's desk, trying to look relaxed. 10 years older, 5 inches taller, and 80 pounds heavier than Lily, with every ounce muscle, Mech endured as a quiet, methodical man with Job's patience. His skin was the color of her favorite caramel latte, and he had a strong streak of the Puritan. He didn't do relaxed well.
His Highness wants to assist in the investigation.
Turner shook his head.
I'm not a Highness. The press likes to call me Prince, but the press likes to sell magazines and newspapers.
I've noticed that about them.
Lily slung her backpack onto her desk. Mech hesitated, as if he weren't sure he should leave her alone with Turner. She flicked him a glance as she unzipped her backpack. He nodded reluctantly and left. She pulled out her laptop.
While we always appreciate civic-minded citizens, there's something of a problem with one of the suspects in an investigation assisting in that investigation.
Turner's straight slashes of eyebrows lifted.
You're blunt.
But I did use my polite face. Chief Delgado sent you to me?
He did. I called him this morning, offering my help. If you want to catch a lupus, you need to know something about us, and I doubt you do. That's not a criticism. There's very little real information available.
You mean Hollywood didn't get it right with the witch's Sabbath? Next you'll be telling me Charlie Chan wasn't really Chinese.
Point taken. He was played by an Occidental actor, wasn't he?
Sidney Toler, among others.
Lily would never admit she had a sneaking fondness for the old Charlie Chan movies, chock full as they were of cliché and stereotyping. But they were so much more fun than James Bond or Bruce Lee. Chan relied on brains, not technology or kung fu, to defeat the bad guys.
Your information might be difficult for me to verify.
And you have no intention of trusting me. Understood. But I have a strong interest in seeing this case solved quickly. I want to see only one lupus blamed for the killing, not all of us. And I don't want that one to be me. I didn't do it. But you'll need proof to believe that.
She studied him. It wasn't unheard of for a lupus leader to cooperate with the police. If a werewolf went on a rampage and wasn't caught, the repercussions for all lupi could be severe. People tended to panic about that sort of thing. And the Species Citizenship Bill was coming up in Congress, which could be affected by adverse public reaction to the case. But the lupi version of cooperating with the police didn't necessarily involve niceties like testimony or evidence. They'd been known to deposit a body at a police station with a note saying that the problem had been taken care of.
Last night you said you didn't have any idea who killed Carlos Fuentes.
I don't.
I won't tolerate any form of vigilantism. Murder is murder in my book.
An admirable attitude. Of course, the law only considers it murder if we are killed while two-footed.
Turner waved that aside. His hands were graceful and long-fingered, like a pianist's. It was hard to imagine them turning into paws.
But you misunderstand. I'm not offering to find your killer for you. I'm offering to brief you on lupus culture and habits.
If he was dealing straight, this was a first. On the candid and forthcoming scale, the lupi ranked about even with the mob or the CIA.
I do want to talk with you.
She reached for the printer cable and plugged it into her laptop.
But I'm due in the captain's office in...
She glanced at her watch.
Oh, damn. 2 minutes. If you wouldn't mind waiting in the other room, Sergeant Meckle could get you a cup of coffee.
Are you referring to whatever is in your mug?
Too strong for you?
Well, you give it to suspects to soften them up, right?
Only works on the wimps.
He shook his head.
I'm in trouble. Already you've discovered my weakness. I'm a coffee snob.
It wasn't what he said so much as the way he said it.
Don't let anyone tell you you do humble well.
We can't expect to master every skill.
He smiled, and his gaze flickered over her, too briefly to be insulting, but his appreciation was obvious.
I have the feeling you don't do humble well either, Detective.
My grandmother claims that humility is the public face of envy.
Why was she talking about grandmother to this man? The little ping that landed with a tug in her belly might be a clue. He'd probably picked up on her response too, damn it. He'd been winning at boy-girl games for a long time. She shook her head.
You're good. I'll give you that. But I'm not playing.
And you're direct. I like that.
He moved closer, smiling, and brushed his fingertips over the ends of her hair.
Your hair smells of oranges.
She leveled a stare at him and ignored the flutter of pleasure.
You're beginning to annoy me.
You'd like to keep this impersonal.
He nodded and let his hand drop.
Reasonable, from your point of view, but you should know I'm not good at treating a woman I'm attracted to impersonally.
Another of those skills you haven't mastered, I take it. Cheer up. It's never too late to start.
I have a 10:30 appointment and you're late for your meeting. Do you work on Saturdays, Detective?
I will be. Why?
Why don't we have a nice business-like lunch tomorrow and discuss things? Somewhere public to encourage me to behave myself.
She'd seen him in public last night at Club Hell, and he hadn't been behaving himself. But so what if she couldn't trust him? She trusted herself.
That works. You know Bishop's on 8th?
I'll find it.
His eyes laughed at her as he held out his hand.
1 o'clock?
Okay.
He might have meant the handshake as a dare. She accepted it for her own reasons. Mostly to get a feel for his brand of magic. His hand closed around hers, large and warm and solid. Her stomach hollowed. Her breath went shallow. Her head light, as if she'd lost oxygen. The muscles in her inner thighs quivered and she stared at his mouth, at the neat white teeth revealed by lips that had parted, like hers. Lips that looked soft. She wanted to touch them. Her eyes flew to his. She saw flecks of gold in the dark irises and the way his pupils had swollen. The pink triangles at the inner corners of his eyes. The dark, thick eyelashes. And the way his lids had pulled back in shock. He dropped her hand. For a moment, they stared at each other. Her heart pounded. His nostrils were flared, his breathing fast. Dear God, what could she say? How to unmake that moment?
I won't be behaving myself.